Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Hello, welcome to another Tech Talk here on RNIB Connect Radio. Great to have you along for the ride. Robin Christofferson is with me on the line. Hello, Robin.
Morning, afternoon, evening, everyone.
Wherever you are in the world, hello. Yes. We've got a big show for you this week. Lots and lots of your emails read by Andy. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robin. How are you both?
Thanks.
I'm here, you know. I don't know what else you are expecting, quite frankly. But yes, we are here. I've got lots of emails to go through. Robin, you're in trouble this week.
I know.
You're in trouble. That's all I'm saying. It's nice for you to get in trouble for once and not me. Although, I do think I get in trouble later in the emails, Andy, so I'm looking forward to getting beaten up senseless on that one as usual.
Oh, good. Just don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah, well, that's it. You are the messenger this week. Thank you for doing that. And also, we're going to be talking about a very interesting piece of technology for people who aren't really into technology. And this is the one, Robin, that I think, out of all of our conversations we've had, and last week, of course, we talked so much about the Victor Reader Stream. There's more talk on that this week in the emails. Lots of Victor Reader Stream love, and I would go so far to say lots of specialist tech love as well, which is interesting because we're heading up to Site Village, and lots of events going on with Site Village this year. Lots of opportunities to see and try out specialist technology. So it's going to be interesting to hear what people think about that technology. But one particular thing that comes out of this interview we're going to hear later is that this piece of tech involves just one button. In fact, I think it's just a knob with a screen that you can control basically everything on the device. And it's really simple to use. You can get, you know, pictures on it. You can send messages on it. You can make calls on it as well and receive those calls. And this is essentially built for older people, Robin, really, isn't it? I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to do the piece now. You've
just given it all away. Yeah. Well, you know me, I'm a big on... it's when you go to the movies, right? You go to the movies and you see a trailer and you think, that's it, I'm not going to see that movie because I've just seen it. That's the trailer, that's it. Well, that's what I've just done. But anyway, it is a good interview. You're going to hear a bit later from Adam Tweed. He's talking to Harriet Gridley from Comp a bit later about that, and news on cyber attacks, which are on the rise. No huge surprise on that one, I guess, but Molly Trenor has a review for us on that, and a report, I should say, on that one coming up a bit later. But we do start where we always mean to start, I think. We should always start here on our show, and that is with the emails.
Email, we get email, we get your email every day.
Oh, yes, we do.
Here's your mail today.
Lots and lots of emails, and Andy's here to read through some of them. Please tell me the first one's nice. Do we start nicely?
Yes, we start nicely, of course. That's good. We do. We're going back to Scandinavia.
Ah, yes.
This email is from Yngve. He says, hello, guys. Here comes another greeting from Norway. In the last week's episode, I heard the message from Tobias in Sweden. He was asking for my YouTube channel that I have ran since March 2016. I remember the weeks before I established this channel, I really considered if I should do the channel in Norwegian or English. The only reason I ended up doing it in Norwegian is simply because it already existed in several other similar sources in English, but very little in Norwegian. Of course, this is not good for people in the UK or in the US, but it might be a very good reason to learn Norwegian. And by learning Norwegian, you actually get three languages for one, because Norwegian, Swedish and Danish are all relatively close.
That feels like an international incident's just been declared. I'm sorry. I don't like the sound of that at all.
Yeah, I'm sure a few Swedish and Danish might argue with that. But yeah, there are similarities in the language, as much as I know about it. So he says that's his best suggestion for today. However, when we talk about my YouTube channel, and this will be a real tongue twister for the English-speaking people in the studio, which is me. But let's try anyway.
Sorry, I believe there's a bus coming with your name on it, Andy, that you're about to be chucked under.
The name for it in Norwegian is Far Stag Technology for System Made.
Sorry, you want to try that again?
Herdag Technology for System Made.
I'm a quarter Norwegian, right. And I'm not going to add anything to that pronunciation.
Yep. I think that sounds great. Yeah, I think that's absolutely brilliant. All complaints to Andy at RNIB. That sounds great, Andy. Well done. That's
Thank
good.
You.
And, you know, I hope you enjoyed your last show after that performance. That was
that's
brilliant.
My last email. I can go now.
Yeah. You go the rest of the show and indeed your life off.
I can translate it into English for you.
Please.
Well, Yngwie's done it for me. He says, this means everyday technology for the visually impaired.
Well, do you know what? It's great that this channel exists. And yeah, quite right. I mean, if it's in Norwegian, that's great. You know, why not? It should be. And the thing is, there are lots of channels. I don't think there's enough channels like this in English, if I'm honest. I mean, I don't know if you agree with that or not, Robin, but I don't think there's enough really out there at the moment.
Well, I mean, perhaps not in an area like, you know, technology and vision impairment, for example, but I think we're spoilt, generally speaking English. You know, we've got, I mean, every three out of every four things that are in the English language are probably from the States, but that's just numbers. Mm. But yeah, I think we're quite spoilt because we can go anywhere in the world and people, you know, accommodate us very nicely with their excellent adeptness at multi-languages. And, you know, we have people over here doing jobs that, you know, they're very overqualified for, and they also speak 10 different languages as well. And that really puts us to shame because we think we've done extremely well if we have a stab at one other language. So yeah, I'm deeply in awe. And if someone can do something in Norwegian to fill a gap that isn't catered for there for that native language, then good for Yngwie.
Well, listen, we can pass on those details to Tobias as well, just in case, perhaps, just guessing that maybe someone doesn't quite pick up on Andy's Norwegian translation of that. So just in case, we will...
apologies for anyone in Norway.
I want to apologise to the entire country of Norway, everyone in...
I've been to Norway.
So have I. I've been there.
Lovely place.
Do you know what? I'll say this about Norway. Amazing place. Nobody's there.
Yeah.
There's no one there. There's like three people I passed once.
Yeah.
That was quiet.
Maybe they saw you coming.
I don't know what you're suggesting, but you're probably right. Right, what else is in the email inbox?
So this next one's from Jules. He says, regarding talking books and the devices to listen to them. Hello, yes. Stephen, Robin and Andy. I was listening to Alan's email, RE the Victor Reader stream, and your consequent conversation. May I make an argument for a third way? It's not new, and I'm sure many people already must do it, and I did suggest in passing a couple of years ago, why not repurpose an old smartphone as a dedicated audiobook player? If you have any tech confidence at all, it's simple to do, and you have no tech confidence, it's a great way of gaining some. Learn by playing. There may be thousands of us with old smartphones laying in the back of the drawer doing nothing. It does not need to be new and powerful. For example, I have used my old ZTE Blade Q Mini. It has a 4-inch screen, dual core processor, 1 GB of RAM, only 4 GB of storage, most of which is used by the operating system, and it runs Android 4.2 Jelly Bean. I bought it in 2013, so you might need a visit to a museum to see one. The important things were it's never going to use as a phone again. It still has a good battery. And I will use it because it takes an SD card as well, being an Android phone. So that's from Julian. Why not repurpose a smartphone, Stephen?
That is a great idea. It actually is. I mean, and not even if it's an Android phone. I mean, you can repurpose older iPhones, although granted, not probably that many of them. I mean, in saying that, though, Robin, I think about the iPod Touch as well around this. A lot of people wonder what the purpose of an iPod Touch is these days. Well, actually, that's one. If you've got an old one, especially...
Yeah, I mean, if you've got stuff in drawers, then absolutely, I think this is a brilliant idea because you can take it out as a second device. You can perhaps use it in dodgier situations, riskier situations where your smartphone, your main phone might, you know, get damaged or whatever. But also just, you know, if you want to not use the battery of your main device throughout the day for listening to books, etc. So I think that's a great idea. And if you haven't got one in your drawers and you want to get an older phone like that ZTE, you could pick one up for a song, you know, much cheaper than the specialist devices that are out there. Well, perhaps you could get a secondhand specialist one as well. But I think it's all about choice. And if it's simplicity that you're after, you might be able to set that up to the point that it's as easy to use, you know, as dedicated a device as something like a Victor Reader Stream. It won't have the tactile buttons. So yeah, you know, and it may or may not be able to support the Overdrive or other talking book services that you want, but if it will meet your needs across all of those different considerations, then go for it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I mean, you know, to Jules's point, and I agree actually with this. I mean, I've got a lot of old tech lying around, as most of you will probably imagine. Some of it is actually fairly new tech as well. But, you know, I've got a lot of stuff lying around, and I think, you know, could I use this for anything? And you know, like Jules says, you know, using an old phone as an audiobook player, especially, say, for example, as an iPhone. I mean, okay, yes, you can use Android as well. And the same would apply here with Android as to Apple. But, you know, but being an Apple fanboy, I'll use an iPhone with AirPlay. And what's great about that is that if you've got an AirPlay speaker, you can AirPlay to that, and it means that you don't have to listen to the book through the phone. You can listen to it through a dedicated speaker. More likely, you'll have a Bluetooth speaker at home. And combining those two can be great. I mean, I used to do this with music. I was always struggling to find ways of carrying around my music, you know, all of my music. And I wanted it. I loved the old iPod Classic. That was my favourite device. But I had to use it with a magnifying glass, and now I can't use it at all. So it's redundant, really. Mm-hmm. Whereas the iPod Touch is quite good, you know, and you can increase the... You can get larger capacities now if you wanted to buy them. Although in saying that, you know, it is ridiculous price when you see the price of the new iPod Touches. I think who's buying these things? But, you know, if you've got an old one lying around, use it. And I even remember going way back with the iPods. There was an iPod out. I can't remember the name of it offhand. But it had no screen. And I don't think it had any buttons on it either. And it was just tiny little... It was like a tiny stick of chewing gum. Maybe a bit smaller than that, actually. Metal. And it had a clip on the back of it that you could just stick it on your jeans or your clothes or whatever. And you plugged in the headphones, and it was actually the remote control was actually on the earbuds.
Yeah, that was just one of the early Shuffle models, and they actually withdrew it relatively quickly because people did want at least one button. But yeah, those Shuffle models were really good.
Well, you know what was great about it? It actually had a kind of voiceover built in, which was it would actually speak the names of the tracks you were listening to. It was actually all spoken feedback, so it was great for us. So that kind of stuff, I mean, I've still got that lying around. It's still usable. I can put some books on it. It still works. Although, I guess the question is, will any of that work when iTunes is killed off? That could be an interesting one. Hopefully, but we shall see. But yeah, really interesting idea, Jules. Thank you for that. And as Robin says, you know, dodgy situations you end up in. I mean, assuming you say dodgy situations, you're taking your time. I'm assuming you don't mean Kandahar. I mean, you're probably thinking, what, the beach somewhere?
Is that a sweetener? No, sorry. water, sports, you know, mud.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Come on, really? Water sports? No, you know, that's not unlike... I'll sit near maybe a water slide, but that's about the height of it. Right, what else is in the inbox?
Hi, guys, says Nadia. I'm going to join the list of Victor Reader Stream fans.
Hey!
Can I say, first of all, how lovely it is to hear a show about VI tech for a change. I hope you won't think me rude, but I have one bugbear about tech talk. It's that you seem to focus on smartphones, and some past shows have even given the impression that the presenters feel a smartphone can do everything, so why would you need anything else? I bought my first Victor Reader Stream 2 years ago. It was a big year for technology, as I also bought my first Synaptic smartphone and my first Amazon Echo. The three devices combined came to less than an iPhone. I've never been one for using one device for everything. Sure, it's great to use your phone for absolutely everything until it gets broken, lost or stolen, or you lose your internet connection. Thanks to the Victor Reader Stream, if anything happens to my phone, I still have an audiobook player, an MP3 player, and a radio. Robin is right when he says you can listen to audiobooks on your Amazon Echo, but am I the only one who's experienced problems there? My Echo has a nasty habit of stopping midway through a book and refusing to play any further. I know it's not a problem with the internet connection, because if I ask the Echo to do something, it likely will. Likewise, if I play a book on my stream, it plays perfectly, so it's not the book. The Echo is the only one that works if you have an internet connection. The stream works fine all the time. Since you can play it while charging the battery, you can literally listen to your books anytime, anywhere. Sure, it can be a bit of a hassle when you have to keep switching on your computer to copy new books onto the stream, but at least once they're on, they do work. It might be quicker simply to ask the Echo to play a book. For reasons best known to itself, it decides not to play it anymore. I love my stream and I wouldn't be without it. In answer to your question, Stephen, I'm pretty sure you must have the first generation. I'm fairly sure mine is second generation and it does have Wi-Fi. And I love the tactile buttons as well. Speaking of cool VI tech, I'm amazed you haven't showcased the new TV box from Synaptic. You can plug it into any TV and it turns it into a smart TV that's completely audio accessible. You can access catch-up and subscription TV services. It's amazing. It's really expensive, but still cheaper than an iPhone. Oh, and am I the only one who can follow a film or program without audio description? Thanks to this new TV box, I was able to try audio description, and I find it irritating. That's from Nadia.
How dare you, Nadia? How dare you? But you know what? That's, again, the thing about choice. And also, yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I can't follow films without audio description. But I think it's because I'm so determined to see what's going on, and I always feel like I'm missing something. I think that's what it is with me.
I find the same with audio description. I don't find they tell us enough, and I also find it quite annoying because... I don't know. It's kind of a half-hearted thing. I'm sorry, but I must be really unrepresentative of the listenership when it comes to TV. It just doesn't do it for me. Really doesn't. No, I find it really frustrating.
I actually don't think you are. And I don't think Nadia is either. I think it's all down to choice, but I think a lot of it is your experience of audio description.
But she's saying she can follow things without audio description, which is amazing.
I don't know how you're following. But I suppose if you're watching a movie, you can kind of get the plot. I mean, the only thing I guess you would miss out on is anything like text on the screen. I watched a movie one night called, I told you about this one, Andy, Searching.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
And it's a movie about, and it's all basically based on a screen of a computer, right? So the whole thing is based on, from the perspective of the computer, and everything that happens in the movie happens from there. It's like a guy who's found out that his daughter's gone missing. He has to find her, and he's in her computer trying to find out what's happened. And yeah, through a sort of series of texts and video messages and all the rest, that's how he finds out what's going on. Now, that would be very difficult to follow without audio description, and you know, because most of that film is silent.
Yeah.
One of my favourite Disney movies is WALL-E, which is... I think the majority of it is silent, yeah, apart from two robots.
There's no speech for the first 40 minutes in that.
That's right, yes. Yeah. So it's like, I have no idea what's going on.
Is it on? Is it playing? What's
yeah, going on? You know something's happening because there's beautiful music playing.
Right.
And actually, that's another thing someone said to me the other week about audio description. They said it talks all over the lovely music, which is a problem. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I watched the Grand Tour last night. I'm just getting back into the Grand Tour again with Jeremy Clarkson and all the guys. And... really enjoying it, but I'm enjoying it even more this season because season two was the first series with audio description, and I have to say, the audio describer really gets into it and has some fun with it as well. So it doesn't feel quite so detached, which is good. So you know, I think it is all about how the audio description is done. You know, without going into all that rant again, I think British audio description is not quite as good as the Americans yet, but it is getting there. And our feedback is really important. So I would encourage you to try certain shows. I mean, if you like the Grand Tour, you might not, but, you know, shows like that are starting to become a bit more personality-driven with it, and that works really well. And some of the Netflix stuff, I think, is really on the ball. Although... after watching Making a Murderer, I watched one episode of it and had to go and lie down. So much information being fired at you. Yeah. It's quite hard to keep track, but, you know, brilliant nonetheless. But it is choice, and absolutely it should be choice. No one should force anything on you. On to your other points, though. I want to go back to the Victor Reader stream point. Yes, I do think it's the first gen I have. Site Village, of course, is happening this week, and I am going to be possibly buying a new version of it. I think I've made my mind up, Robin. Yeah, I like the Victor Reader. And, you know, the more emails I'm hearing about it from our listeners, I actually think, you know what? I actually want one of these properly in my life. I think the one I've got is a bit behind the times. But I quite like one with Wi-Fi. I don't think I want the one that's the Trekker, well, it's not called Trekker Breeze, it's the Victor Reader Trek, which is the one that's got GPS built in. I don't think I want that. But that's just a personal thing. I don't really have a need for that. I would use my phone for GPS. But you know, good luck to anyone who wants that. What was other points that Nadia made? There was a few other points.
The first one she wanted to point out was that that the presenters feel a smartphone can do everything, so why would you need anything else? I don't know if you want to reference that at all.
Well, Robin thinks that.
Well, yeah, I need to put my on that one. I mean, obviously, everybody has, you know, can only really talk from their own position, and I'm really, really fortunate that I feel very comfortable with a phone and actually really treasure the fact that I can walk out of the house to really very heavy days of work with just my phone and sometimes a Bluetooth keyboard in a nice little pouch. And I feel set for that. You know, yes, battery can be a consideration. And I do have a lot of offline. I've got something like 5 gigs worth of podcasts waiting to be listened to. So why, you know, connectivity isn't a big issue. But I'm probably very biased, but I totally get that people, you know, choice is good, I think is what I've said before. And if people want to have a number of devices, and certainly I couldn't just live with my phone, I have to have my computer and I have to have my A-Lady, the Echoes as well. So I totally get where Nadia's coming from there.
I think Nadia's concerned though, and maybe rightly, I don't know. It's always hard to judge with these things, but I think Nadia's concern is that we here in this program talk so much about it that actually we kind of forget the fact that there is all this specialist tech out there and we're actually not giving people the full picture. And I guess that is a concern, which I think is so important why your emails are such an integral part of this programme, because it's so important that you come on and say, well, look, I'm using this. Why are you not talking about this? Or, you know, what about this piece of technology over here? And I think that's really, really important that you do that, because it is important for us. I mean, I use a smartphone all the time. I am getting into more specialist tech as I'm getting blinder, because I don't know, I just seem to be going that way. I feel more comfortable. You see, I'm old school. I grew up with all the tactile button stuff and, you know, a lot of it I didn't really use, but I did, you know, because my sight was better. But I totally got the benefit of that technology. And I think that's why I'm kind of leaning back towards that now. And you know, as much as I love the iPhone, and I do, I find that the newer versions that are coming out, I mean, this iPhone XS that I've got doesn't have a home button. It's got Face ID, not Touch ID. And I find that quite irritating. I mean, it works, don't get me wrong, it does work. But, you know, my phone's often up to my left ear and listening away to it, and then it'll say, you know, oh, you have to unlock, and I'm trying to put the phone in front of me, so I can't hear because I've got the volume down, so I'm not irritating everyone else. And you think, well, where are earphones? And you're like, okay, right, I'll put earphones in, but then the connector doesn't work because it doesn't have a phone jack. And then, of course, you've got the home button thing, which is totally confusing. We've got to swipe up and swipe up half the screen to get to home and swipe up three quarters of the screen to get to the app switcher. You know, it seems it's all moving in a very different direction, which is, of course, the way this technology goes. But I worry that as this technology develops further, phone technology, I think it may become not much inaccessible, but I think it'll just become a little bit harder for people to use. And that's why I like simplicity.
There's certainly a place for specialists, and let's hope that that, you know, blossoming market never dies away. And I think that maybe, you know, it's a good point that you were saying about listeners contributing to kind of redress the balance if we're guilty of focusing too much on the smartphone. You know, the that fantastic smart TV add-on that Nadia was talking about there, the Synaptics box, if she has that to hand and wants to do a quick review, send it in. It sounds like it might be a little bit too expensive for us to get. I don't know, Stephen, maybe you want to, but
I know I'm the classic for going out and buying everything in sight, but I will say this, I have looked at that box. I mean, I haven't seen it in person yet. That is something I'm hoping to look at Sight Village this year, because I am quite keen to look at it. I think the price is something like £700. I could be wrong in that. I remember the price of the box.
See, I'm going to be guilty of kind of going mainstream again. I would also encourage people to look at, for example, the Fire Stick, the Fire TV Stick.
Oh, I would totally disagree with you on that one. I think the Fire Stick's terrible.
Well, it's got voice view and it has access to a limited number of services. So if that fits the bill for you.
Basic. I mean, it'll do Netflix, it'll do Amazon Prime. Beyond that, good luck. I think if you're looking for something that is solid, I would say the Apple TV is a much better option for you.
Oh, absolutely.
But then, of course, I would say that because I'm an Apple fanboy, right? So, you know. but the thing is that, again, it's horses for courses. It depends on what you want. And the great thing with the Synaptic Box, from my understanding, is it kind of is attached to its own sort of cloud. So if you've got Synaptic phone, you get Synaptic TV Box, you've maybe got the other Synaptic software, maybe on the tablet, then, you know, it's all kind of combined and joined up, and that can be really good. You can do a lot with it. It seems like a really good option for people. I haven't tried it yet. That is something I'm hoping to try. I have been in touch with Synaptic, and I've asked them to send us a review out, just, you know, because it's a lot of money to put out just to try. So I've asked them to send us a version of it, and nothing has come back as yet. They haven't come back to me and said, we can do a review, we can talk about it. So that's something I'm working with them on, because I'd love to do one, actually. I'd love to talk about it. But we shall see what happens. Right, look, there's lots of emails to get through. We're going to come back to them later. Last week on the show, Robin kind of threw himself under the bus because he said, why don't we do something on Echo speakers? We were talking about the Echo speakers last week and how good they were versus other. I think we got the question about, you know, how good are they, you know, in comparison to other speakers like Sonos and all the rest. And it's a difficult one because, of course, the price point kind of gives you the answer to that. But there is something you can do with your Echo speakers if you've got more than one of the same type. I put a few caveats in there. But if you've got more than one of the same type, you can actually make a bit of a difference with the sound from your Echo speakers. And Robin has been finding out how.
Now, I succumbed to buying yet another Echo Dot the other day. This is another third gen one, so now we've got two, and we've got them downstairs in the living room and the kitchen that are next to each other. So I thought, hey, let's make them a stereo pair just to see what it's like. It's easy to undo it again. So let's go into the A-Lady app.
Amazon Alexa. Double tap to open.
Now, if you tap on devices, which is the bottom right tab, the bottom right corner of the screen.
Selected. Devices. Tab. 5 of 5. Control Alexa and smart home devices. Devices. Add a new device or group. Button. Devices. Heading. Echo and Alexa. Button.
And then we tap on that button there.
Echo and Alexa. Faith's room. Button. Our bedroom. Button. Sam's room. Button.
And in here we can choose the two Echos that we want. I have already set up a stereo pair for the living room and the kitchen.
The kitchen. Button. Stereo pair slash subwoofer.
Now, when you go in there, it has something about preferred speaker. Which one is the preferred speaker? And that put me off for a while because I'm thinking, oh, am I going to kind of, in effect, disable one of the speakers and only one of them's going to talk? But actually, it just carries on as usual. So I haven't noticed any difference. And I guess that's because they're in different rooms. So it's quite clear to each one which one you're talking to. And I could imagine that if you had, I don't know, one either side of a TV or, you know, mantelpiece or something that you were using as a stereo pair, if you were kind of equidistant from both of them and you talked to the A-Lady, it would be a bit disconcerting if randomly one or the other one answered you. So you'd want a bit of consistency there. So that's probably what that's about.
Stereo pair. Tap either of the pair devices to change the left slash right channels. For a different speaker configuration, delete the speaker set and create a new one.
Now, this is already set up, so you'll see in here we have got one as the left.
Speaker pair. A living room left.
And the other set up as the right.
The kitchen right.
When you set it up, then it will ask you which one you want to be the left and which one you want to be the right after you've chosen your two Echo devices. Now, one note of warning on iOS, at least, and I would imagine it would be the same on Android. You can't tap those two speakers to choose left and right. So you'd have to get a bit of help there, guys. So yeah, that's the one wrinkle.
Unpair speaker system.
So once you've done that, then it says it's going to take a couple of minutes to set up, and then it says it's ready. So we're in the living room here at the moment. And I'm going to talk to one of the Echos. Alexa, what time is it?
The time is 12:08 p.m.
So that's the living room. If I quickly move through to the kitchen. Alexa, what time is it?
It's 12:08 p.m.
So the kitchen won't answer me there. So they're both kind of still working independently. That's fine. So let's get it to play some music.
that has good left-right channel. Alexa, play In My Life by the Beatles.
Here's In My Life by the Beatles on Amazon Music.
Okay, so let's see how we get this one sounding. There are places. Whoa, okay, I'm in the kitchen, very vocally in the kitchen here. Now I'm moving into the living room. So in the living room, yeah, look. Tiny bit of vocal, but mostly just percussion and basically the instruments. Alexa, stop. Definitely a stereo pair, guys. Definitely a stereo pair.
Very interesting. Thank you for that, Robin. A look at how to make a stereo pair of Amazon Echo speakers. Well, last week we talked a bit, Robin, about sound quality, and Rod Carn has been in touch. He disagrees with you on audio quality, I think it's fair to say, Andy.
Yeah, he says, hi, Stephen. Well, whilst Robin may be a very well-informed chappie about tech, I must take issue over the Echo Dot third gen. In my book, the only thing worse than an Echo Dot third gen is a pair of them. They look fantastic and they feel fantastic, but they sound horrible, both soggy and woolly. Compared to the second gen, they are rubbish. I can only assume that Robin has cloth ears. Oh, dear, it's getting insulted now.
No. Okay, carry on. I'm going to agree with him.
The Sonos, which many of you sing the praises of, may have a nice sound, but remember that Sonos only aims at best to achieve CD quality. For those out there that want real hi-fi, they need to obtain a Blue sound system, which has the capability of both downloading and listening to high-res audio, which can be stored on the hard drive of a Blue Sound Vault 2. The ability of Lady A to operate my Blue Sound system is the best thing that Lady A ever did for me. And she's done quite a lot of things for me so far, Rod says. So there you go. Your rebuttal, Robin.
Well, so yeah, I mean, I actually agree with him because that Rod, was it?
Yes.
Good points, Rod. And you're obviously an audiophile, and I'm absolutely not. I think I've mentioned that before. I'm a spoken word person, and to me, bass is my enemy. So I actually prefer the second gen dots too, because I'm a spoken word guy. If I were into music, and I know Stephen is and many people are, then obviously the quality of the sound, and it needs to have more bass, I'm told, to sound good. And the third gens definitely have that, but I don't like bass, so I'm with you on that one. One tip which may or may not work is that you can change the treble, mid-range and bass of your echoes, and that may or may not make them sound better. Just say, hey lady, set the treble to 8 out of 10, for example, set the mid-range to 4 out of 10, set the bass to 10, or whatever you want to do, and that may or may not help. Making a stereo pair will just give you stereo music. It won't change the quality of the music. So, yeah, you're not going to beat Sonos, really. But for the price, you know, is the Sonos Play One even 5 times as good?
I mean, well, let's be honest about it. I mean, you know, talk about price here. You know, you can pick up an Echo Dot third generation, which is the one which has definitely got the better audio quality on it, for sure. I think the first and second gen Echo Dots, I remember our old colleague Sean Priest referring to it as a wasp in a jar, in terms of sound quality, which I think is actually probably closer to the truth than it not being. I mean, I agree, I'm not a huge fan, but I think you're right. For spoken word, if I was listening to a podcast on it, I think it'd be fine. But if you want to hear music on it, terrible, awful. Wouldn't even have one in the house.
I mean, I whenever music's on the other kids or whatever, I actually do prefer the second gen. Because I don't like bass. I don't know. But anyway, horses for courses.
I got a wonderful little amplifier that I hooked up in my kitchen, because when we got the kitchen done up, I decided I wanted to put ceiling speakers in, connect it up to an amplifier, and then I used a second gen Echo Dot plug in. So, you know, you've got the little sound output on the back, the little 3.5mm jack on the back of the Echo Dot.
Absolutely.
You can plug that into anything, frankly. And I hooked it into a little amplifier that I got. Amazing little thing with a hilarious name. It's a Knob Sound. Yes, I did say that. Knob Sound is the name of the amplifier. Get it all out of your system now, guys. Then, you know, I got that. It was only 50 quid or something. Actually, a decent little amplifier. And, you know, it hooks up to my speakers in the ceiling. And there you go. I've got an amazing sounding system, all from an Echo Gen 2. Because it's not so much the audio quality from that speaker I'm bothered about. It's what it's connected to.
Yep.
And I bought two monitor audio ceiling speakers that were brilliant. I actually have them in another room in the house as well, and I love them. I love the sound of them. So yeah, that's the thing. But I will say, I read this email in advance of the show, and I have been looking up Blue Sound. It is a very expensive option, Rod. I think, you know, it starts at, well, you can get various ones, but if you're looking for something that is going to be a sort of CD ripper, is going to be a vault for your music, you're talking, you know, roughly about £1,000 upwards. It's a very expensive option. Don't get me wrong, as a fellow audiophile, Rod, I absolutely love the sound of this. And what I love is not only does it let you rip music, but you can have, you know, the kind of top-end music providers like Tidal, for example, that provide, you know, full high-res quality recordings. Yeah, I love the sound of that. But, you know, it's a lot of money to spend.
I've just seen the price for it as well. Oft.
Yeah, it's very expensive.
I think, yeah, if you're an audiophile and lossless is important to you, it's a thing, then you're not going to be satisfied with any of the Echo sounds, sure.
Look, we're going to come back with more emails later because there's lots to get through. I want to talk about the news this week.
News from the internet.
I'm actually kind of looking a bit closer to home than the internet this week because we're going to start off with one of your colleagues, Robin, who has been out interviewing. Adam Tweed has been talking to Harriet Gridley about an interesting new piece of technology called COMP.
On the 14th of June 2019, AbilityNet, the RNIB, held a joint event at IBM South Bank. This annual event celebrates the amazing work done by our volunteers. Whilst primarily it's an event for us and the RNIB to say thank you, it also gives everybody the opportunity to meet each other, as well as having companies come in to talk about new products. One of the new products demonstrated was COMP from No Isolation, and I had the opportunity to speak with Harriet Gridley, Head of Business Development UK.
My name's Harriet, I'm from No Isolation. We're actually a Norwegian company, founded about 4 years ago now. We opened our UK office about 2 years ago. Everything that No Isolation does is about changing the situation for people who are socially isolated and lonely. And we predominantly do this through warm technology, but it's often not as simple as just making the technology. We also have to campaign for its use as well. So we have two products at the moment. We have AV1, which is a small avatar that represents a child who cannot physically go to school. And it's their eyes, ears and voice in the classroom when they can't be there. We also have COMP. COMP is K-O-M-P, and it is a screen with just one rotary button that enables an older person to only have to turn it on or off, and their relatives can communicate with them through an app that they all have on their phone. So the content that relatives will send are pictures, because you know that that's something that they would really appreciate and you want them to know that you're thinking of them. You could also send them a message to say that you're coming round at 3 o'clock for a cup of tea. And you can also initiate video calls with them. So my sister, who's got two young sons, will do a weekly video call with my granny, so her great-grandchildren. And it's those simple moments that they can't be a part of because of their mobility or living in a faraway place.
Harriet Gridley there from No Isolation, not COMP. Actually, the COMP is the product, in fact. Very interesting to hear what Harriet had to say there, Robin, about this, because it goes back to that age of not so much special. I mean, it is specialist tech, right? But it's technology that can help people who aren't technology-minded at all and keep them in touch with friends and family. The name of the company does give it away, No Isolation, which is really important today.
Yeah, I think so. And technology can play a crucial part, whether it's a smart speaker that by the way, the Echoes can now call to all UK and US and Canadian mobile and landlines free of charge, as well as just to Echo. So something like that is just hugely important from a loneliness or connectivity point of view, just staying in touch with friends and family. But if you've got vision and you and a screen would help as well, then what could be simpler than a screen with a single knob? Well, probably a screen with no knob at all, but that knob could be, you know, a very familiar and reassuring way of interfacing with that device to be able to select an item in a menu. I think you can just scroll through items and click it to select, or use it to turn the volume up and down and things like that. So yeah, it's really, I think it's neat, super neat.
It leads into other tech though. I found this with Synaptic as well, and I know I get a lot of kickback about this when I've said it before, but I do think it's a great way to get into this kind of world of technology. So if it begins your journey into how to use menus, how to use even touch screens, I mean, this doesn't, obviously, it doesn't have a touch screen. This is just a screen with that rotary dial. But I think it's really important that that technology exists, because it does give people a chance to get into this. And you know what? More importantly, it is about connecting with people. I mean, that Echo feature of drop-in, for example, is so valuable. I mean, I've had times where my mum and dad just won't answer their phone for whatever reason, and it's just like, what's going on? And you kind of, just for a minute or two, you get a bit worried. You think, is everything okay? And then I can just drop in, and then I hear my mum sort of fumbling around saying, you know, what's that noise? And why is that thing, you know, why is that, I think she calls Lady A the blue thing. why does that blue thing keep flashing? And then she hears me talking from it, and she almost has a heart attack. But, you know, she gets, you know, she's got it now, and she understands that, oh, right, that's Stephen talking to me. And she feels more secure with the knowledge that that's there, because she knows that if anything was to happen, you know, first of all, she wouldn't have to worry about grabbing a phone and dialing 999. She can get, you know, Lady A to contact me, and then, you know, I can do that. And there are ways you can set it up for, you know, emergency support as well. It's not something you would use as an emergency device, very important to say that, but it is something that can alert other people. And oftentimes that, you know, when you talk about older people especially, or even people, not even older people, just people at home who live alone, asking someone who maybe has an illness, or, you know, has maybe onset dementia or whatever it might be, to take on one of those, I don't know what you call them, but you put them around your neck and then you have them.
Like an emergency fob thing.
Yeah, I mean, that feels very medical. Some family members don't want to know about that. But if you put something in the house like an Echo, very mainstream, you know, very helpful in lots of different ways, but in no way does it feel like it's some kind of device that's there for your, because of your illness. It's there because it's there to be used. You can listen to music on it, you can do whatever. I think that's really good. So, yeah, really interesting story about Comp, something we'll hear about very, well, lots more of, I'm sure, very soon. I want to change tack, though, Robin, because I want...
Sorry, just before you do, I'm really sorry, but just a bit more info. So noisolation.com is the website. Comp is with a K, K-O-M-P. It's got high contrast and large text, so it is for people with vision. And it's £299 up front, and then £75 for 8 months, and then you've got it outright.
Okay. I want to change tack a bit here and talk about cyber attacks. Just a slight change in tack here. But they're on the rise, and Molly Trainor has been finding out more about that for us here on Tech Talk this week.
Cybercrime continues to rise in scale and complexity, affecting essential services, businesses and private individuals alike. It costs the UK billions of pounds, causing untold damage and, at its worst, threatening national security. When malicious hackers disable your business and demand a ransom, should you pay up? Many firms do, out of desperation, turning to intermediaries to help broker the deal. The proportion of UK firms reporting a cyber attack has jumped, despite most businesses admitting they are underprepared for breaches. Companies need to start taking this problem seriously. The number of attacks is going up because hackers are able to find easier ways to attack. Whereas the biggest problem used to be ransomware, it has moved on to become business email compromise, where a member of staff at a firm uses the same password for an out-of-work email address or website login as they do for their work email. Once hackers obtain the password, they then send emails from the work address asking for business clients to send future payments to their bank account rather than to the firm's genuine bank account. We spoke to Gary Sidaway from NTT Security, who told us more about these issues and others from the 2019 Risk Value Report.
It's a management problem. I think this is the key that we're seeing, is that whilst there's great awareness around cybersecurity and cybersecurity incidents, the organisation either thinks it's an IT problem or it's a management that aren't actually enforcing this down through the organisation, and it's everybody's responsibility. So the simple things are to do and look at a risk assessment across the board, look at where you've got internal skills that can manage that, and also then look at partnering with managed security service providers or strategic consultancy groups. And I think one of the things that also came out of the report is this lack of skills across the board as well, particularly in cybersecurity. And I think that's impacting a lot of organizations where they don't know which way to turn. They're sort of in that paralysis, whether they're looking at compliance and compliance initiatives, whether they're looking at point solutions that don't have a complete security architecture. That security expertise is essential.
For more information, listeners can visit nttsecurity.com.
Yeah, cybersecurity, it's on all of us, Robin, to be secure, not just in the workplace, but at home as well.
It's scary, it is. And we get scared enough by, you know, things popping up saying malware detected and stuff like that. You know, what do we do there? And luckily, smartphones and smart speakers and stuff, you know, are much more immune. No, you can't be more immune, can you? They are much more able to defend against those sort of things because they've been architected that way from day one, as it were. So yeah, but we still have a lot of openings, and I think that whilst the technological challenge of keeping abreast, keeping one step ahead of the hackers is huge, I think the social engineering, as they were talking about there, you know, we're all fallible humans, and if we get a credible looking email or whatever, then that's, you know, I think going to be an ongoing challenge as well. And there are organizations whose services actually include sending out very official looking emails, etc., to companies' employees to try and catch them, but really you're being caught by good guys who are then going to, you know, make them aware of what they've done, not being very sensible. So, you know, they're kind of attacking all fronts now. They're trying to make sure that the technological defenses are really good, but also keeping people on their toes as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think of a lot of blind people who still use, and tell me they still use, Windows XP or Windows 7. And of course, those platforms are no longer supported. So, you know, the risk of hacking, the risk of, you know, viruses is higher on those devices. A lot of people don't want to shift to Windows 10. I get that. But of course, with that upgrade comes all the security aspects, you know, keeping Windows Defender up to date. Or you could just buy a Mac where nothing ever goes wrong. Anyway, moving on. Right, so we're going to go back to the emails.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Yes, back to the emails then, and into the inbox again before we go. We've got 10 minutes to go. So, Andy, what have you got?
Oh, that jingle ingrains in your brain eventually, doesn't it? Oh, I could wake up in cold sweats hearing that.
Singing that all night now.
Yes. Email from Stan. He says, greetings from Medford, Oregon. While I was listening to your program and noticed that one person that used the Victor stream referred to iTunes as if the stream used iTunes.
That's right, yeah.
They don't use iTunes. They use a service called OoTunes.
Ah.
Stan, this is on me, I'm afraid, because it was me and the autocorrect function on my Chromebook picked up OoTunes being incorrect. And I changed it to iTunes.
In fairness to you, I think it said O-Tunes, didn't it?
O-Tunes, it got rid of one of the O's, and the O and the I being close. Anyway, yes.
Because O-Tunes. O-Tunes. Yeah, you know this, Robin. I'm sure you know O-Tunes.
Of it, yeah.
Yeah.
O-Tunes, that's double O-T-U-N-E-S, if anyone's listening. They use it for internet radio stations and the like. I also want to point out that many of us use both a smartphone and the phone, and iPhone and Android, but still use the products like VictorStream and the other VictorStream GPS unit. I use both Nearby Explorer and the Trek. I'm always fascinated by how programs function differently depending on the use case. I find it so exciting that we have so many options for us to use. Voice Dream Scanner and the Rebirth of the Voice OCR document reader are just a couple more examples. I must be dedicated to your program because I actually listen at 5 a.m. my time.
Wow.
There we go. Take care. That's from Stan.
Well, I need my coffee in the morning, Stan. I hope you've got a coffee beside you, because you'll need one if it's 5 a.m. you're listening to us in Oregon. Well, good to have you along for the ride. I hope you're enjoying the show, and thank you for giving us your time. Again, Robin, you know, specialist versus mainstream doesn't have to be a versus. In fact, you know, they can live together in beautiful harmony.
As long as we get enough information out there that people can make sensible choices, then I think we're trying to do our job at least. Yeah, uTunes is one of those services like TuneIn Radio and iHeartRadio and things like that. And just one top tip for iOS 13, which is going to be coming out soonish, the public beta is already out, is that you can now ask the S lady, S-I-R-I, if
or man,
oh yeah, absolutely, or man, if you want radio stations, you can now ask for those, and it pulls them from TuneIn and iHeart over here in the UK. Anyway, I'm not sure what it might do uTunes in the States, but yeah, that was a big gap in her function or his functionality up till now, that you couldn't ask for radio, but you can.
You can now. Yeah, that's right. And I know that a lot of the news articles are focusing on the HomePod, which will now have access to those radio stations, over 100,000 of them. But at the same time, you know, that applies to the phones and the iPads and the computers, I hope, as well. Although Siri on the Mac? Interesting. I'll get to that another week. Anyway, right, back to the inbox. Andy?
Hello, Tech Talk family, says Julie.
Oh, family. I like that. That's
family.
Nice. Yes. Well, welcome to the... Well, Julie is part of the family. She's been regular on the show.
Yes. May I endorse the comments regarding the Victus Reader Stream? Although I do have an iPhone and I use it for podcasts, Audible and Kindle book listening, sometimes there's nothing better than tactile buttons when you're drifting off and the stream is so convenient. I hope that you enjoy Site Village, Stephen. Although I can't get to Birmingham, I'm going to go to Manchester in October. Looking forward to that. All the best from Julie.
Oh, I couldn't wait that long. I couldn't have the opportunity to buy tech, wait a few more months. Can't be done.
You're going to do both, aren't you?
I'll just go to all of them. Yes, I'm going to Birmingham. Looking forward to it as well. But yes, that is another plus point for the Victor Reader. The love for this device is quite incredible. It's clear from our conversation last week. A lot of people like it. Thank you for that, Julie. What else is there?
Email from Greg. He says, hello, I'm sorry, but I have to correct Robin once again as he misunderstood something. The Internet Archive Open Library has several hundred thousand copyrighted books available for free to the blind in protected DAISY format that cannot be accessed on a smartphone or even a PC. They can only be read on a specialized device that is equipped with an authorization key. This is to protect the copyright holder from piracy. In the US, the key we use to access content from the National Library Service for Blind also will open content from Internet Library Archive Open Library. Because the RNIB uses Overdrive instead of using a protected DAISY key system, it seems to me that the blind people in the UK may be unnecessarily limited in their access to books that are easily accessible to other blind people throughout the world. I do hope this is not the case. Does UK law permit the free distribution of copyrighted books in specialised format for the blind? How would the UK implement the Marrakesh Treaty? As an outsider, I don't see how using Overdrive is a satisfactory method of accessing books for the blind. I guess that's why you favour the smartphone, because you're handcuffed by Overdrive. This makes me so very sad. That's from Greg in Pennsylvania.
That's a really interesting point. Actually, that I didn't know that was the case in America. And Greg, thank you for bringing that to our attention. I guess Robin knew that because he knows everything. But I didn't know that. And that is news to me that, you know, there is a protected database. Just one thing I'll say is that the DAISY, Overdrive from RNIB, although RNIB don't own Overdrive, it's a service that RNIB essentially subscribe to where the books, you know, are sort of funneled through. It's not the greatest in the world. And I think RNIB, although they haven't publicly said anything about it, there is clearly a shift away from it. That's my impression anyway. At least I hope that's the case, because I agree with many people who say it's not the easiest thing to use. But actually, that bigger point, Robin, of access to books, we actually could be hindered by our access to books because we're not using some kind of protected system like that, Open Library.
Yeah, I mean, we are bound by the Marrakesh Treaty here as well. We're signatories. So one would, in an ideal world, all visually impaired people would have the choice of alternative formats that are available elsewhere in the world, you know, it would be universally available. But Greg's absolutely right. There's a much bigger choice in America. I'm not sure about the Internet Archive library. I'm not familiar with it, which might mean that we don't have access to it over here. So yeah, as you were saying, Stephen, you have to have the right software key, as Greg was saying as well, to be able to access a particular service. And that's because they are copy protected. So in America, it's Bard and various others, much bigger selection than over here in the UK, where the RNIB Talking Book Library has worked with Overdrive, as you said, to allow them to access those copy protected materials. And there are various players. There's the dedicated players like the Stream. And then there's software on your phone like Dolphin's Easy Reader, which is super simple and really good to use too. But yeah, as far as access to copy protected materials, as far as I'm aware, and please do write in, guys, it's only the Talking Book Library via Overdrive that we can access over here in the UK. Obviously, there's loads of other Daisy books that you can listen to, read on loads of other devices and software as well. But those, you know, those can't be copy protected.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate reality, it seems. I mean, look, there may be some box somewhere that's locked that we can't access for whatever reason, or we just didn't even know it was there and we could access. But, you know, not any that I'm aware of, for sure. You know, I know of various libraries that I've heard of people using. I mean, there's Calibre, there's Project Gutenberg, there's the RNIB Overdrive, obviously. There are libraries out there, but nothing like what I'm hearing is available in America. And again, it goes back to my point from last week, which is where I can see now why the Victor Reader is so popular in the States, because it is connected into these libraries. It's connected into NFB Newsline, the National Federation of the Blind's Newsline service, which delivers the newspapers. You know, that is a really, really important tool. And the fact that it's available, you know, through these devices, you know, now makes sense to me why that device would be so popular. Very, very interesting conversation this week. Andy, we've got so many more emails we can't, would have time for.
Oh, no, well, there's one left. But yeah, I think we're running short of time, aren't we?
Yeah, we'll leave that. We'll hang on to that one for next week. We'll add it to the new pile of emails that come in. I'm sure there'll be plenty of them. I am at Site Village this week, so I'm looking forward to telling you next week all the things I've bought. So... you can look forward to my update on that one, what my credit card is doing and what my wife is saying about that. All that coming up on next week's show. We'll have lots more chat as well from your emails and what's happening in the week's news. I imagine, Robin, there's going to be quite a lot coming out of Site Village in terms of product announcements as well. So I'm looking forward to talking about that. In the meantime, if you want to keep in touch, please do. You're more than welcome to. Andy is happy to read it. Well, I say he's happy. He's forced to come in here and read these emails out. But I think
tied up. You can't tell, but
no, I think you're happy with it, aren't you?
Hang on, where's the script? That is not correct, Stephen.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I think that's the wrong script. Oh. But anyway, that is it from us. Thank you. Until next time, Robin, Andy. See you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks, guys.